There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th podcast, listeners. I'm here this week with my co-host, as always, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
Good. It's like we haven't talked already today, like three times for other podcasts.
3, 30, 40, 50 emails between us. Yeah, and Susan and I both know our listeners are getting this episode a day late, and that's because we had some, we've had a busy 4 or 5 days.
It turns out there is a hard cap on how many podcasts you can make in one day.
For those of you who follow us on our other podcast, Undisclosed, you might have known that there was a big ruling in the Adnan Syed case last week, a great ruling that made Good Friday even better for me. And so we spent much of the weekend going over the court's opinion and then recording a special episode. So we are podcasted out. But we have an awesome guest here to perk us back up and tell us what the hell we've been missing for the last 5 days. And that is Wajahat Ali. We're welcoming back Wajahat. Thank you so much for being with us, Waj.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Oh my God, you scared
everyone. Yeah, listeners. I just wanted to wake them up. I wanted to terrify half the audience and have the other audience say, oh, that's an interesting language. What just happened?
Just don't say Allahu Akbar. We're good if you don't do that.
That's the only one they know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only one they know. No, congratulations to both of you for hashtag Free Adnan. Some amazing news. I just want to tell the listeners that I knew Rabia pre. There's a pre-serial and post-serial Rabia. I knew her pre-serial, and she used to lug around the court documents of this kid she knew, Adnan, in her the backseat of her car. She told all of us, "Hey, there's this guy I know. I think he's innocent."
And so
nobody paid attention to her. And then she took it to this lady called Sarah Koenig, and there was something called Serial and Undisclosed. And then Susan came in with her legal brain, and voila, here he goes. How many years? What, 17 years?
Well, it's been 19. He's in prison now. But before Serial, I just tried to buy the affection of friends with food, and nobody paid attention. Now everybody loves me. So that's been a big bonus.
I like how you guys celebrate with masochism by talking about Donald Trump on your third podcast of the day. So that's just... you are a child of immigrants, used to pain, a gluttony for pain, Rabia. Susan, I have no idea what's wrong with you.
Just so our listeners know, it is 11:30 at night on a Monday night, so we are definitely gluttons for punishment. And I want to do a quick, I didn't actually formally introduce Wajahat, because I know a lot of our listeners heard you the first time, and they loved you, had great feedback. But just quickly, just to refresh your memory about how amazing and awesome you are in your body of work, Wajahat Ali is a attorney. He is an award-winning playwright, a journalist, a New York Times contributor. His columns in New York Times are hilarious. They're smart, funny. Please definitely check them out. He actually helped launch the Al Jazeera America Network and had a wonderful show on there called The Stream, which I really used to enjoy. He is also a Peabody Award-winning producer of a series called The Secret Life of Muslims, which you guys should definitely check out. Wajahat, where can folks find that?
Peabody nominated, I have to say that honesty.
Okay,
In the alternative fact world, yes, I'm a Peabody award-winning Bollywood star.
In my heart, you are a winner. Yeah,
in Rabia's head. But you can find that online on Huffington Post, on Secret Life of Muslims, on Vox, or just Google The Secret Life of Muslims, and you'll see the short videos we made, which thankfully a lot of people liked.
Yeah. And that's just a few of the amazing, amazing things he's done at this tender age. So anyhow, glad to have you back, Waj. And you are telling us that there's a lot of things that happened this week, huh?
Yeah, it's at 11:30. I think I just tweeted right before I jumped on the call. There's too much news today. Dear news, please just take a break. Let me catch up. Stop being so eager and ambitious. And right after I said that, Channing Tatum was trending, because now Channing Tatum has split after almost 9 years of marriage. So we can't even have Channing Tatum's marriage. Because we have Donald Trump. Yeah, he split it after 9 years of marriage to Jenna. And I'm like, no. And then Villanova just won. And then Trump attacked Washington Post. And the stock market went down. And he also made up interesting facts about DACA. And then there was also this whole thing about Robert Mueller potentially talking to Roger Stone. And Roger Stone apparently said that he didn't talk to Julian Assange. He was just making it up because, you know, that's the stuff you make up and just tweet about. And that was just some of the news today. And there's other stuff also.
That was just today, huh? Susan, do you want to start?
I was going to say, this evening, I got some free time finally. And the first article I saw messed me up for a while.
Uh-oh.
And my cat up for a while. Because it was about this boy who fell into the sewer in L.A. for 12 hours and survived.
Right.
Yeah, no, I totally missed this. This kid, like, yesterday fell into the sewer for 12 hours. They thought he was dead. They found him still hanging in there. So, yeah,
How old is he? Kind of
messed me up for a while. 12, 13.
Oh, that's a big kid.
That seems to be a metaphor for the United States of America. Like, we dropped in the sewer, but we're still surviving. Like, somehow we'll survive. Survival is victory for us.
Yeah, they found him from, like, handprints on the side of the wall. So that's, like, tracking down. So we're, like, you know, that's where America is right now.
Well, he's got a book deal in his future, probably. And as far as the America analogy, I think we are still in the sewer. Well, Susan, that wasn't a great way to jump back into reality.
Yeah, that's all I know. Yeah.
I will say this. I have not been on Twitter that much in the last few days, and it's other than tweeting about the Adnan stuff, it kind of felt good.
Yeah.
You guys were wise. You guys were basking in good news and victory. And literally, if you just were on Twitter today, you'd be ambushed by just like a blitzkrieg of news. You also had, I forgot, Russia announced that Donald Trump wants to invite Putin for a meeting at the White House. So Russia is kind of actively trolling us. They're like, oh, American media, did you know that Donald Trump invited Putin for a meeting at the White House? Oh, you didn't know? Our bad. Let us tell you. And then also, of course, Scott Pruitt, head of the EPA, allegedly using an apartment owned by the wife of the chairman of a lobbying firm that was hoping to gain the agency's endorsement. And now we're asking, is this a conflict?
He has been paying $60. He has been paying
$50. $50 now.
$50 a day to stay there.
Yeah. I was asking someone this question, like, what's the difference between me and Trump? Is that I could not lie with a straight, like, I have this thing called sharam, which is an Arabic word for shame. Like, he just lies with such shamelessness that it's almost like I want to applaud him for being like this type of individual. He'd be like, you said grab women by the pussy. No, I didn't. Here's an audio. It's not me. You're the one saying, hi, I'm Donald Trump saying this. Prove it. The audio clip, fake news. And this
he's
is kind of like gaslighting
like
America.
That. He's
not lie life. If you believe it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, and there are people who believe it. I mean, first, you know what? Can we talk a little bit about the Roseanne reboot? First of all.
Yes, I know about this. Let's talk about that.
Who watched it?
I did not watch it.
Wajahat, did you watch it?
I, you know what? It's my mini protest. I chose not to watch it. Forgive me.
Here's what I watched. I watched her on Twitter having like this like conspiracy theory meltdown. Apparently, she is a big believer in the whole QAnon like child sex trafficking ring stuff. Yeah, she's all into that.
Roseanne Barr, you know, Roseanne has had a reboot, and you know, apparently the ratings in her first episode, like, she's already renewed for a second season. She just blew through the roof, like 18 million viewers. It was just huge. We know she's a real life Trump supporter, and on the show, apparently, she plays a Trump supporter, and her sister Laurie Metcalf, who played by Laurie Metcalf in the show, plays somebody who's not a Trump supporter. She's a Bernie supporter. I don't know what. This is what I've read. I haven't watched it. I want to watch it, but. To me, I'm like, what they're doing is like they're Cosby showing the crazy Trumpsters. That's what they're doing. They're, you know what I mean? It's like a normal, they're trying to normalize somebody like Roseanne Trump, who, you know, after her ratings were announced, the next day she goes on Twitter and tweets the craziest crap. Can we read that tweet, by the way? Anybody can pull it up or I can pull it up.
And as we're pulling up this tweet, don't forget that Donald Trump personally called Roseanne congratulating her for her.
Was that before or after her tweet?
It was before her tweet. It was right after the ratings came out. And then Roseanne tweeted what Susan was saying, this insane conspiracy theory, which basically posits that Donald Trump is saving these victimized children from these pedophile rings, which is a made-up conspiracy theory, which found life on 4chan. And so like the question for me is, when do you separate the art from the artists? And is there a double standard? But why for Roseanne? Like, if you look, think about it. If you're a person of color and you tweet out what Roseanne has tweeted out about LGBT communities, Arabs, Palestinians, Muslims, conspiracy theories, would you be rewarded and fail up like Roseanne?
Fail up.
And like, seriously, like, she gets to fail up. Kevin Williamson gets to fail up. And everyone's talking about the plight of real Americans. Well, the Roseanne on the Roseanne show is totally far removed from Roseanne Barr. The Roseanne on the Roseanne show is not tweeting crazy ass conspiracy theories and like saying horribly rancid, bigoted stuff against Arabs and Muslims. And it just makes me wonder, like, what if Rabia said the same thing and tweeted the same thing? Would she be rewarded with another podcast, or would there be a double standard in place that said, Rabia, how dare you? You will now be, you know, outcast out of Hollywood and the podcast world. And so it's really disturbing how we're catering to what we assume is quote unquote Trump's base, normalizing, which is abnormal behavior, and expecting like a normal outcome, which in reality, in my opinion, is kind of moving the Overton window of what's acceptable more and more right. to the right. My two cents.
I mean, and that's just the first episode. Let's see how this goes. You know, I feel like she felt like she had earned the right to tweet that crazy tweet. Although, you know, I honestly, I've never followed her Twitter account. And when I learned kind of where she is in all of this, I was really heartbroken because I've always loved the show and I've loved Roseanne. But then there was that really unfortunate incident of the national anthem, which actually offended me too, all those years ago when she grabbed herself.
She deleted the tweet.
Is she? Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, the tweet. I don't find it.
I tried to find the tweet. All right, I found a copy of it though. Here it is. She deleted it. I guess her network decided to have some words with her. But it says, President Trump has freed so many children held in bondage to pimps all over this world. Hundreds each month. He has broken up trafficking rings in high places everywhere. Notice that. I disagree on some things, but give him benefit of doubt for now. So, we should probably back up and explain what she's referencing here.
That is...
I didn't want to...
What in the hell
QAnon.
Is she talking about? QAnon. Yeah, what is QAnon? What is that?
So this is a non-expert view of it because I've only seen like people like mentioning on Twitter. I've not done the full deep dive into this conspiracy craziness. But what happened at some point is someone went on 4chan and pretended to be someone really important and claimed it's basically Nostradamus. Like it's someone who claims to be part of like higher up in the Trump administration who is telling 4chan all the secrets about what's going to happen next and what's really going on in Trump world and why Trump is playing 26 million D chess and why this is. So the basic core or one of the basic cores of this is that in secret, this is all a big setup so that Trump can take down the massive pedophile rings that the previous governments all were part of.
And remember Pizzagate?
Yeah.
Basically, that evolved times 10.
Yeah, amazing. And you know, by the way, guys, I don't know if I should be proud, but Roseanne blocked me on Twitter.
What?
Yeah.
That is, I am so proud of you. I am actually, what did you do to deserve that?
I have no idea. I did a tweet about some of the stuff we were talking about, and I used the hashtag Roseanne, and it went quasi-viral. And after that, I think she kind of, I mean, it was kind of strange that Roseanne, who was, you know, a multimillionaire basking in her 18 million ratings, would somehow be paying attention to Twitter. But there you go.
I mean, she did respond. She did ask QAnon to DM her.
Wow.
Is that right?
Yeah, she did. She did. She apparently had it. Apparently she thinks QAnon might be Trump himself.
Well, I mean, she Trump himself.
She doesn't have to tweet.
Her,
he so. Called. He called her. So
Yeah.
I would love that phone call. Hopefully that was recorded and some staffer will leak it because I would love it.
I want to see Trump's DMs. I'll be honest. Who knows what that's
you
like.
You want to slide into Trump's DMs. I think you'll
I don't
want
to slide
sticky.
Into him. I just want to look
you'll
at
leave
him
sticky. If, I don't think you want to I don't think anyone wants to slide into his DMs or vice
like
versa.
They're probably like, hi, how are you messaging me? What is this? Am I tweeting to you now? It's like old man DMs. He doesn't know what's going on. He's like, how did
am
you
I ordering
here?
Pizza online?
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of DMs, let's talk a little bit about you know, I counted in the last 3 days, and you know, this was over the high holy days of like, you know, Good Friday, Easter, Passover. You know, Trump was clearly spending his time in devotion. He tweeted 19 times in the last 3 days. 16 of those 19 tweets were actually attacks on people or things or institutions. And so let's talk a little bit about the target. So here's the deal, Susan. I hate shopping for bras because it's hard to find the right fit.
Does anyone not hate it?
Does anybody not? That's true. Does anybody love it? It's hard finding the right fit. It's not easy. All of our bodies are shaped differently. And you know what? The thing about women's sizes is we don't have a lot of options.
Yeah, it's not like a shirt. You just like put it on and you know, there's like a template to go for. For the bras, there's like a big range and they're not really overlapping for a lot of people.
Right. But now there's a better way to go bra shopping, and that is Third Love, because Third Love uses thousands of real women's measurements and super smoothing memory foam. I mean, these bras feel so good. And they create bras that fit better and feel great.
They are super comfy and super easy to wear. None of those like line showing things going on.
Easy to wear and they fit like a glove because you know what? Old school bras only carry 15 sizes. Well, women come in a lot more sizes than that. And Third Love has 60 sizes, including half cups. And honestly, I've never heard of any other brand with half cups.
So to find the bra you've been waiting for your whole life, All you have to do is answer a few simple questions from Third Love's Fit Finder quiz. It just takes 60 seconds, and you can do it from the comfort of your home. And you'll never have that awkward fitting room experience again.
Never again.
Never.
Never. So try a Third Love bra. It's so comfortable, you might actually forget you're wearing it. And if you don't agree, returns and exchanges are always easy and free.
This year, make the change that will change the way you think about bras. Go to thirdlove.com/45th. That's thirdlove.com/45th to find your perfect fitting bra and to get 15% off your first order. That's thirdlove.com/45th.
Let's go to
Department of Justice.
Oh, that's a good DOJ. One. Okay. DOJ and the FBI. What did he
do? DOJ. That's the one tweet I saw live this whole week. And I'm like, just you see it pop up and you're like, wait, what? Department of scare quote justice?
Yes, he put the word justice in quotes. He's tweeted, so sad that Department of Justice and the FBI are slow walking or even not giving the unredacted documents requested by Congress, an embarrassment to our country. What is he talking about?
I mean, okay, look, I read that and I'm kind of like, I know you're an idiot and I know you don't mean this in a good way, but I kind of agree with you. Just because I'm frustrated with all the FOIAs and stuff. That, like, it is an embarrassment to our country that we cannot get accurate documents on criminal justice issues. Like, available. Like, they do slow walk it. They do delay. They do horrible things to stop defendants from getting access to their cases. So I was reading it in that mindset at the time. And I'm like, you know what? It is an embarrassment to our country. And justice should be in quotes. But that's not how he meant it. So I'm not going to give him too much credit.
He totally did not mean it like that. I mean, he's talking about the email stuff again, right?
Yeah. Talking about investigations into, like, Uranium One.
And was it about McCabe or am I jumping?
I think Uranium One. I think this was a rant about how that they're trying to investigate, like, Hillary's supposed. Yeah.
And I think also Emailgate, one more time, Emailgate.
Oh, yeah.
And FBI's abuses of FISA, that's another one. And the interesting thing is,
he unfortunately did not hashtag the tweet, so I'm not quite sure what he meant.
I don't think he knows what he means sometimes. I don't think he's, you know, to be honest with you, and I'm trying to be snarky, I don't think he really understands what the DOJ does. I don't think he really understands what DACA actually is. I don't think he really understands, like, what the First Amendment's all about. And his lack of understanding or expertise on these issues is reflected in these reckless tweets, which not only are damaging to our country, and we could talk about literally how they are damaging the stock market today with this attack on Amazon and the Washington Post, but, like, just look at this. It's like, it's nonsense. Like, what are you talking about, dude? And he's like, I have no idea what I'm talking about, but I have the right to tweet it. Okay, I'm the president. I tweet the best. And the funny thing is people always forget, like, dude, it's your attorney general, Jeff Sessions, a Republican who campaigned for you. Like, why are you whining and complaining? And by the way, all the FBI people you hate are Republicans put in place by you. And people sometimes, like, often forget, like, we kind of don't, like, we forget to connect the dots because there's such a blitzkrieg of chaos in the Trump administration. But people, like, forget. Like, dude, you're the one who chose to keep Comey on after you praised him for reopening the investigation. Rosenstein is a Republican. Mueller is a Republican. All these guys are Republicans that you have kept on. So how can they be part of the deep state? And they're like, logic does not work here in the Oval Office. Fake news. Go away. Bye-bye, bad guy.
Well, to be fair, his logic is not that it's because they're like, he's not a Republican in many respects in the way he doesn't care about party ID. He doesn't care what you are. There are plenty of Republicans who are against him. So it's not like the R tag that matters. It's, are you on Team Trump? And if you're not, you're an enemy.
But Susan, can you argue now that the Republican Party, I was thinking about this earlier, I was talking with my wife about this, but isn't the Republican Party now Trump's party because they have gone along for a year and a half?
They are. I guess I should divide it. Like, if you are pre-Trump R, that doesn't matter. Your pre-Trump R affiliation is not actually a sign of loyalty.
Well, he tweeted numerous times. You mentioned DACA. He tweeted a lot about not just DACA, but immigration in general. And he's been attacking the governor of California in a number of different ways publicly recently. And he said, Governor Jerry Moonbeam Brown, and Moonbeam is in quotes. I don't know. What is he talking about? Pardon.
Is that a thing?
What's that?
Is that a thing?
No, his name's not Jerry Moonbeam.
I don't know.
Like, is that a, like, what, I don't even, is that like something I've missed out on?
Is it an insult? I don't know. Anyway, maybe he's saying he's a hippie. Governor Jerry Moonbeam Brown pardoned 5 criminal illegal aliens whose crimes include kidnapping and robbery, badly beating wife, and threatening a crime with intent to terrorize, dealing drugs. Is this really what the great people of California want? Now, first of all, I don't know the specifics of what he's talking about, but I can guarantee you that if anybody is an even a green card holder, if you're an immigrant, if you're even a green card holder and you're convicted of these kinds of crimes, you can be put in removal proceedings. I mean, there's a couple things. So at the end of the day, the buck stops with ICE on issues like this. You cannot expect that no immigrant in this country will ever not commit a crime. As far as pardoning 5 illegal aliens, pardon or no pardon, after they've committed the act, he cannot pardon them from deportation. That is not, like, that's not in his purview. So DHS would still have the ability to get rid of these folks. I don't really know what he's talking about. Now, he's talked about DACA a couple of times. He also tweeted, "No more DACA deal," angrily. He has alleged many times on Twitter that the Democrats are stopping DACA, which, I mean, he's the one who canceled DACA.
He's not what DACA is. He does not know if it's a verb or a noun or an adjective. He has got a vague idea that, like, somehow it helps brown people from the South come to America. But that's about as far as his understanding goes.
Remember that they caught him on that, well, they decided to, like, have a live airing of his conversation with Democrats and Republicans, where he essentially said he's fine with DACA and he's fine for a clean immigration bill. And then Republicans were terrified and walked him back. And then he went against DACA. I mean, he really doesn't. I don't think he understands it at all. Like, Susan, you're making a point, but for the listeners, really, like, he seems to be completely confused by both his tweets and his mission on television. And again, he's the one, Robbie, you're right. He's the one who rescinded DACA and then punted it to Congress and now is blaming Democrats for his stupid decision of rescinding DACA. And thankfully,
well, I mean, I think, for him, I think he was thinking this is a strategic way to get what I want. This is going to be right. This is going to be the way I get the funding for the wall and whatever else he wanted. And the Democrats will come. I actually think Trump wants DACA and he's been like begging to get DACA by using it as a negotiating tool. But he definitely doesn't understand DACA because he also tweeted on April 1st. I mean, he was very busy on Easter Sunday. "These big flows of people are all trying to take advantage of DACA. They want in on the act." That is not how DACA. You cannot walk in over the border today and be eligible for DACA. You have had to be eligible for DACA. You have had to have been here for a certain number of years, have come in as a child. New kids can't just walk in and be
eligible for DACA. Pre-2007, right? So like 11 years ago, you had to be in here and establish residency and not be, convicted of any crimes.
You have to show your school records.
I mean, there's lots of requirements. And also, let's not forget for your listeners, an important point. Like 2 days ago, Ann Coulter told the New York Times, Frank Bruni in particular, the Trump supporters would actually flee if he did not double down on the wall. This is the issue. And that's why Ann Coulter increased her attacks on Donald Trump, thinking that he was actually failing his base by going weak on immigration. And voila, 2 days later, I think I tweeted it out also. I was like, watch, Trump's going to do something to please Ann Coulter. And voila, the tweets came out because she openly said, "I and others will break with
you." She was very angry.
If you do not give us this wall. And so he doubles down on a wall that Mexico will never pay for, that will probably never be built, but it satiates the kind of terrified xenophobia of the base that really wants to blame brown people for crimes that they are not committing. And people rather feel safe than be free.
Isn't the wall now supposed to be built by the Pentagon? Isn't that what
they're going to have him build the wall, according to one of his tweets, which took me a while to figure out. I thought he was like, build a wall through M, like the letter. I'm like, why are we building
military,
a wall through Mexico?
Okay.
Like, I thought the wall's going to be on the other side of Mexico, but apparently meant military.
And also, he's going to attack NAFTA, too. So it's a good way to win over allies. This is the art of the deal. You attack your ally that you depend on. You attack NAFTA. You mock them. And you blame them for the quote-unquote immigration problem. And also, you do a trade war and then have China retaliate. But meanwhile, you cozy up to Putin. I think this is a great way for hashtag MAGA.
Yeah. Or in South Korea, you... renegotiate a trade deal already in place, claiming that was unfair to you. And then when it's actually about done, you claim you're going to sabotage it unless they do something more on North Korea?
Well, can we just step back and like just make a request that the United States actually name an ambassador to South Korea? Because I don't think people realize that there's still no ambassador to South Korea. I think we should find, we should probably get Lou Dobbs, who apparently calls in to the White House and Trump lets him speak. So Lou Dobbs and Fox News personalities are influencing policy. So
I think this very highly experienced 22-year-old from the Disney Network just got a job there, too. So I'm sure Lou Dobbs would be well qualified. Now, the State Department.
I don't want to know the answer to this, but which one?
Oh, I don't even remember her name, but she's now like in communications. I think she's replaced Hope Hicks. I have no idea.
I will Google this like the crackerjack detective that I am. Give me 30 seconds.
I can just tell you this. She does look a little bit like Ivanka. All right. So you mentioned the ambassador issue, and I read recently that, you know, makes me think of the State Department, that the State Department has a new proposal for visa applicants. And this is really, as somebody who practiced immigration law for many years, this is really ridiculous. Basically, what they're going to require now is nearly all applicants who apply for a visa to the U.S., which is going to be about 14.5 million people a year. That includes people who are just visiting, just for any number of reasons, coming to the U.S., are going to be asked to submit their social media usernames for the past 5 years. Wow. And social media usernames for 20 different social media platforms, includes all kinds of, you know, people from every country, all our allies and not our allies. And, you know, that is just a completely, there's no national security reason for something like this. This is completely like a political move. I mean, my guess is they're going to be scouring people's social media to see if they are, you know, like right. If they say, I mean, I don't even understand.
You do understand. That's exactly it. They're going to do an auditing of the ideologies and views of immigrants to see which immigrants they like and the ones that are pro-Trump and his policies. In addition, they have already, vis-a-vis Donald Trump and his own admission, said that they prefer immigrants from nice countries like Norway and not the shithole countries. And also, knowing the ideology and quotes and policies of Stephen Miller and Jeff Sessions, we know this administration is not a fan of undocumented immigrants or legal immigrants. So we know exactly why. I think, Robbie, you're giving him the benefit of the doubt, but I think we can go there and make the assumption about why they're doing
this. I'm not surprised at why Trump would want this. I think in my head, I keep thinking there must be career professionals at state and other agencies that are going to be acting as firewalls of this kind of stuff. And the fact that this proposal has been created and drafted makes me realize that state is screwed. The kind of people we know who work at the State Department would never have allowed something like this to happen.
No. And the people that are currently working there who are our friends, I was just talking to one 2 days ago, just depression, right? Like there's no leadership. They can't even execute basic bureaucracy because they don't know who to report to. And people are just trying to dig in and survive this. Like it's like Dunkirk. Survival is victory. And people forget Republicans. One thing I'll say is I talked to a hardcore Midwestern Republican, conservative through and through, you know, young white woman who said, I'm only here in DHS because if I leave, the person who will replace me will be far more extreme. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. So we have even Republicans, like you were saying, Susan, that like the pre-Trump R's, who are deciding their act of resistance is to stay here and just suffer because if they replace themselves, someone worse will come in that will execute these atrocious policies without blinking.
We are watching a case study in the act of breakdown the rule of law.
Right.
It's not even subtle. It's not even slow. And it's happening and people aren't deniable what's going on. And you know what? It's not to say America was always the like rule of law land. It definitely was not. There was always flexibility there. There's always like a gray zone continuum. But we were always firmly on like the rule of law side of that continuum. Whereas now, every business owner in America knows that praising Trump and being a sycophant means you might have a chance at huge riches. And attacking Trump or insulting him means anything you're connected to business-wise, anything in your enterprise, is going to be a target for destruction. That's the reality, like the bare bones reality we are right now is if you are in America and you want to save your business, your best short-term goal and maybe long-term goal is to praise the jeepus out of Trump.
Well, speaking and that's of what happens in dictatorships. That's what happens.
That is straight it's normal and typical. That's just how things are in many countries. Like, you are defined by your ability to please the president. And we are very, very, very quickly reaching, like, saturation point of that mindset here in America.
I was going to talk a little bit about the news that's coming out about the 2020 census and how it's going to include a question about citizenship. Now, I actually don't know enough about this issue and why it's generating the kind of like opposition. You know, so apparently since 1950, it has never had a question about citizenship. The purpose of the census is not just to count people, but also, you know, it impacts kind of like, you know, the distribution of federal funding, redistricting stuff for, you know, politics and races. But so this question of citizenship, how do you think this is going to be weaponized? Because we know it is.
You don't. It is a weapon in itself. You don't need to weaponize it. People won't answer.
Yeah, that's exactly what they want. They want people to opt out, not answer, which will depress the numbers in blue states, which actually have the populations, which will actually then give the government ammunition to decrease funding for essential services as an act of punishing the blue states, and also help them with their gerrymandering project, which has skewed the map so much that even if Democrats take control of the House, they're still screwed for years. And so this will kind of accelerate that project, but in a very open, naked way, which also has a deep racial animus.
And it's not just blue states, though, because it's definitely it's more insidious. It's more targeted. It's a way of using resources to benefit specific communities within states, like Texas. Texas is not a blue state, but it's going to have areas that are underrepresented due to the census question that are not going to get resources that are directed there. So it's a way of targeting within states, like who gets resources, who doesn't.
Has either of you ever responded to a census? I actually can't remember if I've ever done this before.
You had to have.
How did I have to have?
You've been alive.
Is it done through the mail?
Censuses.
Is it done in person?
No,
I really don't even know.
No, yeah, they
dude,
come to your door.
I don't think in my
have
life.
You've never answered a census?
I've never answered a census. And I guess so my question is this, because I don't exactly, if they come to your door, what would prevent somebody saying, yeah, I'm a citizen? That's it.
Nothing.
Close the door.
Otherwise, it's illegal. It is a crime.
Maybe all the immigrants and people of color should just check white and then have all the resources come to us. And then all of us also then use our Second Amendment to go get weapons and post it on social media to ensure that the NRA basically goes bankrupt.
They'll have to shut down the Second Amendment that happens. Rabia, they come to your door and they, like, ask you questions.
Yeah. I don't think they ever made it to our door. I honestly don't remember. In my adult life, never happened. So I don't know what's going on.
What happens if Rabia had was taking care of babies and making biryani and taking care of her cat and the
No, but so would y'all have you have responded?
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. I wish I could, but I'm sure we did. Like they come and they come back too. If you haven't been, if you're not at home,
they do come back.
They try to get you, and that's why it happens every few years, right? How often does it happen, Susan?
Every 10 years.
Every 10 years, like a huge project. Exactly.
I remember in 2010, they were arguing that they argued that Obama was inflating his lying about the economy recovering because it was all just census jobs that were boosting the numbers. So I'm sure that argument will not have a replay for the 2020 census. Rabia, what do people do for their news before podcasts?
Well, I heard they used to read, and they read some great sources like The Economist.
Like the magazine?
The magazine, the one that's been around for 170 years and is still around.
The OG of political podcasts.
The OG of political podcasts? Well, that's true. And the thing about The Economist is it's actually not only about economics. I mean, don't be fooled by the name because I'm not an economist. I don't know a lot about finances, but it offers such a broad range of subjects and expert pieces for folks. We're talking about politics, business, science, technology, even art. And the environment.
I've actually had a subscription to The Economist for a long time. So my dad got it for me and gets it from every year.
Good job, Dad. That's awesome. Well, no wonder you are so incredibly prepared for what is happening in the world. And nowadays, you know what? People need to be prepared for what's going on in the world. And they need facts. They need real news. No more fake stuff.
Well, The Economist is a smart guide for the forces changing the world today. And to get your free copy of The Economist, just go to economist.com/45th and enter your details for the free copy to be delivered to your door.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about Trump's attacks on Amazon. I mean, this has been remarkable to watch because for the president of the United States to attack repeatedly an American company that employs thousands of Americans on the most ridiculous charges. Okay, here's what's happened in the recent days, and you can follow it on Twitter, obviously, but I'm taking this from a Vanity Fair report. What Trump claimed is that Amazon benefits in billions of dollars of subsidies from the U.S. Post Office and skirts sales taxes. He tweeted, "Unlike others, they pay little or no taxes to state and local governments, use our postal system as their delivery boy, causing tremendous loss to the U.S., and are putting many thousands of retailers out of business." Then he also tweeted, "Only fools or worse are saying that our money-losing post office makes money with Amazon. They lose a fortune, and this will be changed. Also, our fully tax-paying retailers are closing stores all over the country, not a level playing field."
Wow.
So the tweets caused Amazon stock to plunge 5% today. And apparently, according to this report, there are four sources in the White House or close to the White House saying that Trump is looking for ways to escalate his Twitter attacks on Amazon to further damage the company. One of the sources said he is off the hook on this. It's war. He gets obsessed with something, and now he's obsessed with Bezos. Trump is like, how can I fuck with him?
Yeah. And also the S&P fell 2.2%. And also Amazon does not own the Washington Post. Jeff Bezos does. And so the editor of the Post, Martin Baron, is like, what the hell's happening? He doesn't even have his, like, you know, he said it's completely made up. He doesn't even have his facts right. And it goes back to the point that we're talking about. It's Trump is being fed perhaps conspiracy theories and is convinced that Washington Post and CNN and others are, quote unquote, fake news that are against him. So he wants to punish him, and he uses his bully pulpit to punish Jeff Bezos. And by punishing Jeff Bezos, he attacks Amazon, which is whatever you think of Amazon, is a big part of our economy and has employs many people. Its stock goes down 5.2%. Other stock goes down thanks to also the trade war that he's initiated because China's retaliated, which hurts our economy, which hurts the First Amendment and free press. And meanwhile, everyone's like, dude, Amazon doesn't own the Post. What are you doing?
But you don't need conspiracy theories to explain it, though, because it's also a totally rational move if you're a dictator. No, it is not owned by the Post. There's no, like, direct ownership there, but it has common ownership interest together in Jeff Bezos. So
he wants to punish him.
Yeah. That it's
well, he's not punishing Bezos. Look, if Amazon, well, okay, so they lost 5%, but I mean, considering the size of this company, I think they'll recover just fine. But if Amazon decides to walk away from the U.S. Post Office and find another delivery service and negotiate and contract with FedEx, let's say, who is going to really, I mean, I think the Post Office is going to go down in flames. They have been broke for years. They have been struggling for years. And I think Amazon probably keeps them afloat at this point.
Well, not necessarily afloat, but Fox News tweeted out the facts of how Amazon works with USPS and actually has helped USPS and actually quite literally, like, increases its revenue. So this he's even wrong about the facts. And I think Fox News, which is fascinating that Fox News tweeted this out, realizes that the president is a bit too unhinged on this, and like, this will actually hurt the U.S. economy. And so if this conspiracy theory keeps up, that's exactly probably what will happen. Amazon will say, okay, we'll take our business away from USPS. We'll go to some other place. And then USPS is further screwed.
Or it could be the Washington Post backs off and stops reporting so harshly on Trump.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think it's strong. I don't think in strong, like, the strong version will happen. I don't think they're going to intentionally say, let's be nice to Trump so that Amazon isn't going to hurt. But they now know the consequences for any kind of anti-Trump action, and they're going to be much more careful beyond normal standards, and they're going to be, it'd be natural human nature to shy away from criticizing Trump unless you absolutely have to.
Why wouldn't he go after you or Susan? If he can go after Amazon, Washington Post, and Bezos on a Twitter rampage, and which causes their stock to depreciate, what keeps Donald Trump from attacking individual columnists who don't toe the line?
I mean, we don't have a whole lot to lose.
He'll get there eventually. He'll get there eventually.
Let me ask you a question, Susan. If he is tweeting things that are completely false about Amazon, is there no, like, defamatory, like, legal, is some kind of legal action that Amazon can take to, like, prevent him?
No, I can't.
They can't say
the lawsuits right now are as pre-president actions.
You can't sue a president for anything, a sitting president for anything.
You can sue for, like, pre-president.
No, Paula Jones. Remember Paula Jones?
You can sue the pre-president stuff.
Yeah.
No, I mean now, because this is straight up, like, defamation. I don't know what it's something, but
he's acting. So as long as he's acting under the authority of the president, you cannot sue him.
I okay. I'm so sorry. I have to step away for 2 minutes because I left potatoes roasting in the oven for my baby's meal. And I'm positive my husband has fallen asleep. I told him to turn it off. I can smell them. I'll be back.
They're
sweet potatoes for the baby. My husband's asleep. They're burning. All right. I'll be back. Bye. I'll be right back.
You know what? Another important thing is, I don't know if you've been following, Susan, is while he attacked the Washington Post, he also praised Sinclair Broadcast Group, which is the country's largest broadcaster, which might actually, will probably, thanks to our FCC chair, Ajit Pai, will buy Tribune Media and then have access to 70% of local news stations. And for those listeners who haven't seen it yet, I strongly recommend seeing the amazing video that Deadspin put out, where literally like Stepford Wives or like robots, all the local news channels anchors from across the country parroted a mandated script by Sinclair Broadcasting. And Sinclair Broadcasting, for those of you who don't know, according to Jared Kushner, who openly admitted this, they had a kind of a verbal agreement that they'd give them access to Trump if, you know, it'd be a kind of a tit for tat. And you have pro-Trump folks right there. And essentially, you're literally looking at propaganda in real time going to local news. And for those of you who are like, oh, who cares? This local news. Most Americans trust local news more so than the papers of record. And in between weather, sports, and traffic, you're going to have Trump propaganda with one of the Trump advisors. What is this guy? This Russian-born Boris Epstein, mandated by Sinclair to have 9 segments a week run on local news. And so that's what's also happening. This is what dictators do. It's propaganda 101.
It's not, though. This is an advanced level, new age propaganda state media, because this is not the old model where the state owns the media and they tell me what to say. This is this weird capitalistic, like, integrated mutant version where they are independent. There's not literally state owned media right now. And the media has more power in this relationship, but it's still this intertwining of the two. Because Fox has power now. It has the goddamn audience of one that's worth more than the audience of everyone else. And they can influence the news and the world and policies through their media by sucking up to Trump, essentially. So it's definitely, I think it's a new age of propaganda where it's private interests who are parroting a party line to get the power they need to issue propaganda that, yeah, helps the people in power, but also helps their agenda, however their agenda is defined.
It's a good point, Susan, because Nixon never had Fox News, and Nixon never had Sinclair, and Nixon never had right-wing radio, and Nixon never had social media vis-a-vis Breitbart. And right-wing radio is in, like, 30% of Americans get their news from radio. Right-wing personalities dominate. Then you got, probably now with this Tribune acquisition, 70% of local news channels owned by Sinclair. Then you have the number one cable news, Fox News. And then you have online sites, which is permeated with fake news, and Russia's helping thanks to that. And so literally we will see like 40% of America living in their own bubble with their own facts, being fed propaganda in which the entire world is against them and their only savior is Donald Trump. It's literally like Gables would be having an erection right now if he could see this.
Rabia, how are the potatoes?
You know what? I rushed upstairs and my husband had not all heroes wear capes. He had, in fact, turned off the oven and he gets extra potatoes.
Let it be known, poor Irfan, you had zero faith in him, but let's give it up to Irfan. He did his job. Well done, Irfan.
Yeah, he gets extra sweet potatoes just for that. that's not literal. Anyway, so...
My best line of the podcast, Gables would have had an erection. I mean, like, I just dropped the phone and walk away. I can't top that.
But see, now I hear the word, I hear gerbils. And I just think of Stephen Miller. So the whole imagery is like not working for me.
Which is, you know, he's real low key. He's pretty low key. That's what he's saying.
His way is low key because he is not good on TV. He is a disaster on TV. Trump does like it in the moment, but he sees the feedback. Everyone's like, oh, Jesus Christ, what is that guy on TV?
And Trump also doesn't like people who take the spotlight away from him. So that's actually another saving grace for Miller. And you had mentioned earlier, Susan, that there has not been a firing of the week this week. Who do you think is going to go next? We know Shulkin was out recently. And who's hanging in by?
Pruitt.
Carson?
Pruitt. First Pruitt, then Kelly.
I hate to play into the game because this is what Trump probably either unintentionally or intentionally wants. But like, he wants this like firing of the week. Who's going to get fired this week? Who's going to get like voted off the island? He's absolutely done that recent weeks, but it's going to be Pruitt.
Carson. What about Carson?
Carson has been low for a bit. He's kept out of the news. Like, today, like, I, just in, like, the 3 hours, like, I was kind of looking at news again. There were, like, 20 articles on Pruitt.
Yeah.
Like, just tonight.
There's a lot of news. There's a lot of news about Pruitt. That's right.
And CNN has a source that said he would be on his way out because this is deeply damaging. And apparently, you know, the one saving grace about all this is that the criminals are so incompetent and reckless that they're self-defeating. I mean, and the fact that he's so brazen, brazen and arrogant and just so shameless with his activity. And there's been so much transparency about it and so much, you know, media coverage that it makes Trump look bad. So he'd probably be the first one to go. And then I think Kelly's going to be right after.
At a certain point, though, institutions will fail and this will no longer work. For now, it does. But they are trying to get to a point where that's there's true. No longer infrastructure that can stop this kind of corruption by, like, just talking about it.
Which is why the House needs to be taken in 2018, which is why voting is so important.
Yeah, and I think it will be. If Kelly leaves, you know, that's one more adult gone. I mean, adult to the, I mean, vis-a-vis, I mean, like, with respect
small,
to Trump.
Small A adult.
With respect to Trump. Okay, but, I mean, like, people are saying that.
Adult? I'm going to challenge you on that one. I don't think that's really a fair categorization of Kelly. He's like maybe a, he's a tween.
Trump makes Trumpers look reasonable. But you know, I think Trump is becoming more and more unfettered. And I think that's also kind of what's been happening the last few days. Reports are like, you know, there are less and less people controlling him. Hope Hicks left. That also might be one reason he became unhinged. Do you guys see that weird picture as she walked away from, it looked like.
Of him and Hope Hicks. I saw that. That was so awkward. Oh my God. It wasn't like sympathy for him, but like it was an internal embarrassment. You see, you're like, oh my God, I can't look at this photo. It hurts me to see this.
But I'm in the middle between what you and Susan are saying, because you know, Kelly is by far not the adult in the room because he's an enabler, and his comments about slavery and him attacking Congressman Wilson, saying that she was lying about the conversation with the wife of the slain soldier, and more. I mean, there's so many examples, right? But at the same time, he did try to bring some order, he did try to bring some schedule, he did try to keep Trump on track. And Trump, as we know in the last 2 weeks with the leaks, apparently doesn't see the need for a chief of staff and thinks he now, a year and a half in, like, can do it by himself, which is more troubling because you'll see more and more kind of unhinged attacks on, like, DOJ and DACA and Bezos, and there'll be trade wars. And so maybe Kelly, you know, with the small A adult or tween, as we have said, at least keeps the childish, reckless impulses of Trump somewhat at bay. So him leaving with not being replaced by anyone, and then you have Pompeo and Bolton in there. And by the way, let's not forget, we were talking about appearances. The reason why Trump didn't want Bolton in the first place is because he didn't like his mustache. but, you know, this is a guy like Bolton who, as a NSA national security advisor, he does not have to get confirmation, by the way, a guy who's so extreme that even Republicans are like, yeah, this guy's extreme, who wants to bomb Iran, and also, you know, doesn't believe in the United Nations and used to be ambassador of the United Nations because God hates us. This is the guy in the NSA right now. These are the people who are surrounding Trump, Pompeo, Miller, and Bolton, and apparently Kelly is going to leave. So all the people who could potentially put any brakes on him are going to be gone. That should terrify us.
Well, that's why we need the House in November, and maybe finally the House can put the brakes on him, because there seems to be no other option to save this country at this point.
I mean, I would love to be totally wrong, and I hope I am, and God knows predicting something's the best way to be wrong about it, but I think we're heading towards an economic meltdown the way Trump's going, and then all hell's going to break loose. When he loses his one, like, fake claim to fame, what's going to happen? I mean, it's not even just Trump. I mean, I'm sure...
He'll blame somebody. He will find a scapegoat and people will believe him.
Some will, but it'll be undismic. Like, we're now a year and a half almost into like the Trump era. If there's a meltdown, there will be blame cast on him and he can't fix it. It's not even, no president could fix it at this point if it happens. And eventually it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I think we're going to go from what seems like the worst to like, oh wait, this is the actual worst and it's here. And there's no way out because we have no tools left to fix it.
No matter what you do for work, chances are you are staring at your phone or computer a lot. I know I do, and I'm guessing, Susan, you do too.
Just a fair bit.
Fair bit. Pretty much like, what, 12 hours a day?
Pretty much all
But you know what?
Just trying to read Trump's tweets makes you look at the screen for like, what, 6 or 7 hours a day?
Yeah, and then reading all the stories about him takes up a lot of our screen time. But here's the thing. Our eyes were not made to stare at screens all day. And when you do that, what ends up happening is you have dryness, migraines, blurry vision. And it's just a few of the reasons that you need to protect your eyes. And guess what? You can now do it and look great at the same time with a pair of computer glasses from Felix Gray.
Felix Gray's lenses are specially designed to filter out blue light and eliminate glare from screens, which are the two main culprits of digital eye strain.
And their frames are gorgeous. They're handcrafted from premium Italian acetate, and it's actually the same stuff that Versace uses. You have your Felix Gray frames, right?
Yeah, they're pretty stylish.
I've got mine too. I feel pretty fancy when I put them on. They do look great. And everyone can benefit from wearing a pair of Felix Grays.
So I can look cool sitting alone in my office reading Twitter.
They're also available in non-prescription and reading lenses. And the prescription ones are coming soon. So I can't wait for that because I'm pretty blind and I know you wear prescription glasses too.
And all orders are free shipping and free returns. So you've got nothing to lose except that annoying eye strain.
So give your eyes the break they deserve. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/45th to try a pair of Felix Gray computer glasses and discover a smarter way to work. Believe me, it's going to help your eye strain, help with the migraines. A lot of us spending too much time on that screen. Our eyes deserve it. That's felixgrayglasses.com/45th. One more time, felixgrayglasses.com/45th.
I wonder how much Trump himself, him and his family, are losing every time the stock market falls, and if that's ever a calculation.
But he's still the president.
You gotta have money to lose it.
That's true. Yeah,
he's the president. But look, he's the president. He's the most powerful man on earth. He's the commander in chief of the most powerful country. And look, just look at Saudi Arabia. Like, everyone is both trying to play him and court him, right? And they can get access to him through Kushner. That's what apparently Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, China also thought was, okay, this guy is a naive upstart. He's pliable. And at the same time, Donald Trump, as president of the United States, holds court on the international stage. And so, you know, what better, bigger, more lucrative ATM than the United States of America as the president of the United States? And specifically, when he has amassed this base, which he has accurately predicted a year and a half ago that he could shoot someone in the middle of Times Square and they would still be with him, he can pivot out of the Oval Office and start Trump networks under the Trump brand name. And they will follow him because the Republican Party now belongs to Donald Trump. The one thing I was thinking was, it's like dealing with children. And I was telling my wife this, the only way his base is going to learn is through pain. It's like when you tell your child, don't fall in the ditch with spikes, and your child rebels, and then they fall, mm-hmm. and then you have to drag them out, and then like they learn. I think a third of his base would learn and say, oh my God, we got conned. The other third of his base will say,
damn it,
we made a mistake, but we have too much pride. We won't admit it. And then the last third will blame the Mexicans and Muslims for pushing them into the ditch. But pain's going to be, unfortunately, the only way they're going to learn. And unfortunately, that pain is going to be felt across America, is going to weaken us, which is exactly what ISIS and Russia wants. So I kind of agree with Susan that it's going to hurt us, but I'm not as nihilistic yet. I think there's going to be enough resistance. We're seeing this with lawyers. We're seeing it with the private sector. We're seeing this with people on the street. And also, I still have some faith in patriots, intelligence communities who will resist, and the Mueller investigation. But maybe I'm delusional.
Speaking of which, perfect segue, because I wanted to get on the Mueller investigation, a little bit of news that came out this week before we wrap up. And that is this. The New York Times reported that John Dowd, which is Trump's personal attorney, who actually quit right before they reported this, had published a report saying that apparently Dowd had discussed the possibility of presidential pardons with lawyers that represent former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and Paul Manafort. So, now, apparently, the alleged discussions of pardons with Flynn's attorney occurred while the Mueller investigation was ongoing, but before the plea bargain with Flynn was concluded. So, two things I want to ask you guys. Number one, POTUS has pardon power. We know that. But this is not how it's supposed to work. So, Susan, as a lawyer, can you explain why this discussion of a pardon with Flynn and Manafort could potentially be a crime?
This is like a really high level discussion for like right now at 12:30 a.m. But okay, so there's no solid answer here. That is not necessarily clear one way or another. I mean, so the pardon power is a presidential power. It's very strong. It's assigned to him. He can use it in a lot of ways. The founders did consider the problem of abuse of the pardon power, and they seem to have concluded that the actual solution is to impeach the motherfucker. So, like, yeah, there's an argument
to be made. I think that was actually a verbatim conversation between Jefferson
and Federalist Papers 69. this has been considered before at the very start, and that seems to have been, like, their gist of, like, where they're going with it. Like, yeah, like, okay, this is possible the president could totally abuse this, but if that's so, time for the other branches to check him on it.
Well, here's the thing, though. The reason I think it's an actual story, because we all know he's had the power. In fact, we've talked about on this show, what if he just pardons everybody, is because this is not a discussion that's happening after the fact. This is happening during the Mueller investigation. So it can come across like it's obstruction. Before anything's happened, they're like offering, they're dangling pardons before these guys, are convicted. There's no conviction yet. What are you, you know what I mean? And it's like a bribe, basically.
Yeah, and that's where the limit justice is. Like, yeah. Could the president straight up sell pardons? Like, hey, you got convicted of a crime? Give me like $100,000 or like $200,000 for a very serious felony. I'll pardon you.
Right. And the timing is interesting because, you know, what I thought was interesting was that he dangled these pardon, you know, whatever offers before Flynn, but Flynn still took the plea deal. He didn't play ball. What do you think about that?
And the key weighed his choices in a very fair market kind of way and realized that his best outcome was not on the Trump train.
And you know, at the same time, I can I just say this because we're all attorneys. If Dowd does not get disbarred, then like nobody kind of deserves to get disbarred. Like the bar is really high to get disbarred if this is proven true that he tried to basically do obstruction of justice on behalf of the president, dangling a pardon to make sure that they play ball and don't cooperate with Robert Mueller. It's like, it's stunning. It's like, it's actually stunning, but because I'm so numbed by everything we've talked about for the last hour, it's kind of not stunning. It's like, Dowd.
But of course they are. Like, of course they're doing that. We all know they're probably doing it. So having the news revealed is like, whatever. We know they're not corrupt. So whatever.
I'll be honest. I did not expect that they would be stupid enough to start these kinds of negotiations, like such direct negotiations, such a direct offer.
they're full on stupid.
Well, apparently Mueller in his investigation has been asking a lot of folks specifically questions about these conversations around pardons. So he's on it. He's on it.
Also, you know, I think another news item we missed was Rick Gates seems to be one of the big treasure troves for Mueller.
I did see that. That was like so long ago now.
Yeah, he's the one that's pretty much, I think, given up a lot of the goods that could potentially sink some other players.
They went to talk to Gates and they're like, he's like, do you want info on Manafort?
We assume this was because of Manafort. Yeah, but it was not even for Manafort because we all assumed it was because of Manafort, but apparently Manafort's so screwed that Mueller and team are like, nah, dog, we got enough on Manafort. Don't worry. Yeah.
They want to get
Gates president on collusion with Trump and collusion, and apparently he's given up some tasty information. That should concern Trump.
That's how hard Mueller's deal was. Mueller's not like, you ain't giving me info on Manafort. You're giving me Trump or nothing. And Gates was like, okay, yeah, you get Trump. We don't know what he has on Trump because it's very possible. Like Gates, unlike Manafort, was not part of the inner circle. He was not like long-term besties. He didn't run up and down the elevators of Trump Tower with Trump. So he may not have, he definitely wouldn't have had the kind of info Manafort had. But he had a lot of info, and it seems like whatever he had, he did hand over.
There you go. And also, let's see what happens with Roger Stone.
Roger Stone's not going to survive this. Roger Stone's too stupid and coked up.
You know, the two people who I really want to see go down, and I know I get some like malicious glee out of this, God forgive me, Roger Stone, just because he's so smug and arrogant, and Jared Kushner, just because he's Jared Kushner. I would love it if these two guys.
And also because he's a slumlord who's a horrible human being.
But also Stone going down has some like narrative like synergy going on. I mean, he was part of the Nixon era and he has survived to be part of the Trump era. And this is where it ends. But that's just if you're writing fiction and not living in this horrible real life thing we're in now.
Called America, a great country. Hey, I love this country.
All right. So I think that's it for us this week. And thank you guys both for agreeing to come on like in the middle of the night and doing this. And I hope our listeners appreciate our sacrifice.
Yes, indeed. Watch a hot. Thanks a lot.
Most importantly, are the potatoes tasty?
I'm gonna check those out in a minute, and they're sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes are always tasty.
They're always tasty. You can eat them raw, basically, but not really. But pretty much, I would.
All right, guys. Well, you guys have a good one. Rest up, Susan. I hope you feel better. I know you've been fighting a cold for a while now. And Wajahat, kiss the babies and say hello to the lovely wife. Thanks so much. Oh, by the way, Wajahat, let us listeners know, how can they find you online?
You can find me online at Wajahat Ali. That's at W-A-J-A-H-A-T-A-L-I. I apologize for all the syllables.
Let me also plug Wajahat, by the way, who he's represented by the Levine Agency. You can book him as a speaker for an event or whatever. I mean, he's an amazing, amazing public speaker, and he's got a profile.
I do tech support. I make chai.
He does Trump impressions.
He's about to head out in the Uber right now. He does it all. But anyhow, check him out on the Levine Agency and bring him to your organization. He's fantastic. All right, guys. Have a good one.
Night, guys.
Take care, guys. Thank you.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.